And as I made some changes and met with a business coach regarding my agency, he asked me the question that no one had ever asked me before, and that was, if money wasn't a factor, if you did not have to make a living for your family, if you were you won the lottery, or you didn't even have to think about how you were going to pay the bills, what would you do? And the words fell out of my mouth. I would open an autism resource and treatment center.
Hey guys, welcome back to the How It's Built podcast. My name is Billy Cook and I am your host. This week we have our second nonprofit, Tracy Sacon from ARTC, or Autism Resource Treatment Center, is here sharing her story about starting the center and really leaving behind a thriving business and pursuing her passion that is to help other families that are dealing with autism. She really has a great story that I think will resonate with a lot of people in regards to her children being diagnosed, what it's like to go through some of the treatment options that are associated with that, as well as leaving behind something that she had done and was very successful at for a long time to pursue her passion. Hope you guys enjoy.
Hi, I'm Tracy Sacon, and I am the founder and CEO of Autism Resource and Treatment Center here in San Diego.
What started this whole process? How did you come up with this idea to start this? And what does the center do exactly?
So the center brings resources and treatments together for all ages on the autism spectrum. And we also support families through the process. So you ask how I got started. Well, I have four kids. And when my youngest came along, we started seeing some differences in the way that he was developing. And his name is Luca. He is now 10. This process for him started back in 2011, and he was only 22 months. So when we noticed these differences in Luca's development, you know, as a mother, I wanted to explain all of those red flags away. First and foremost, I didn't know what they meant, meaning that I had no idea what autism was or what the signs and symptoms were. And I, after you know, four kids, thought I had this figured out, this parenting thing figured out, in that they just developed differently. Luca, however, was developing very differently. And in fact, it seemed at around 18 months, he just started going backwards in his development, meaning that the sounds that he had learned, the, you know, the way that he would interact with us and so forth, just kind of stopped and started going backwards. And initially, we thought it was a hearing impairment, because of the sounds that he was making or not making, or the confusion that seemed to go along with that. And we were right, it was a hearing impairment to begin with. But once we got that scenario remedied or situation remedied, we thought we just needed a speech therapist to help him catch up after that. So he seemed to go backwards. We got the surgery, had tubes put in his ears and removed the fluid. He regained then the majority of his hearing, and we thought, now we just need to help him catch up. And one day, when he was about 21 months old, right after his surgery, his speech therapist was sitting in the living room with me, and she said to me, "I think there's something else going on with Luca." And I asked her what she thought, and she said, "I'm not qualified to tell you," which was hard to hear, because I'm thinking, oh my goodness, someone knows what's going on with my baby. I don't know what's going on with my baby, and she's not willing to tell me. And I finally got her to step outside of her therapist shoes and into my mommy shoes with me, and she said to me, "I think that he is exhibiting signs of autism." Now, this was 2011, and my husband happened to be sitting on the sofa in the same room, and he immediately picks up his phone and Googles autism. And the first thing that pops up is Rain Man. So 2011, Google wasn't as great as it is today. And that really was all it had to feed us first. And so he immediately got apprehensive. Of course, that drove my anxiety through the roof. And so the therapist said to us, "You really need to take him to your pediatrician to get him diagnosed, and or to get some help. Go to your pediatrician and get some help." And so I immediately took him to our pediatrician. And during that visit, we were in the room about 10 minutes. And he said to us, and this is the guy who's known Luca for his whole life, his short life, but has known us for a good, you know, 5 years. And he just looked at me and said, "You know, Trace, I'm not worried about autism with him. He's not exhibiting any signs." And I completed my checklist, which was, I think, a series of about 8 or 10 questions. He completed his checklist, and he scored low to no as far as risk factors go. And so I accepted his answer and went home, and I had this knot in my stomach. And I'm feeling like, gosh, if there's a professional telling me that he's exhibiting these signs, and after 10 minutes, my pediatrician, whom I still love, he just didn't know what he didn't know at that time, was telling me, I'm not worried about this. Where do I go with that? So I immediately picked up the phone the very next morning and called my pediatrician and said, I need to come in and see you, but I'm not bringing Luca. I need to talk to you about this. And so I did. And while we're sitting in the room, I said to him, I feel like there is something going on with Luca. I don't know what it is, but I need to know what it is to know what to do for him. And so I want you to send me to the best of the best who can tell me if my child has autism or not and what that means and what to do. And sitting in the room, he brought up on his screen, he showed me the Autism Center of Excellence, which happens to be here in La Jolla. And so I left, picked up my cell, called Autism Center of Excellence, made an appointment, and had him in within the week. And after about 8 hours of assessments, he was diagnosed with autism, moderate to severe on the spectrum. So he was really struggling at that point and had gone backwards so far that he's now nonverbal, checked out. And what I mean by that is checked out to me means he was kind of locked in his own mind. We couldn't reach him. You literally could walk in front of him, look him in the eye, and wave your hands. And it was as if he was looking straight through me. And then he'd even started banging his head. We thought at the time, well, perhaps because he doesn't have communication, he's really frustrated and he's doing that. Now we know, after going through this journey with him, that that was a sensory thing and that he was just trying to feel. So that was back in 2011, and once we got his diagnosis, Autism Center of Excellence helped us to understand what his future could look like if we really embrace this opportunity to get him as much therapy as we could between the diagnosis and age 3 or 4. So our golden opportunity for neurological change for him would be, because of the neuroplasticity in the brain, that golden opportunity would be between the 22 months of his, when he was diagnosed, to 36 months. So from there, we got Luca into as much therapy as we could. So he was in ABA therapy, which is applied behavior analysis. That's the autism therapy, or that's what's recommended by most professionals, many professionals. So we got him into as much ABA as we could, speech therapy and occupational therapy. And
what did those sessions actually look like for, a 2 to 3 year old, essentially? What kind of things are they working on and doing with him to help kind of progress him in the areas that you had mentioned he regressed?
So what autism therapies do is they learn what the challenges are for the child, and then they step into their world to help them through play therapy to learn what's missing, so what's misfiring. So autism, in the simplistic form, and this is literally the most simplistic way that I can explain what it is, autism is an overproduction of neurons in the brain. And that science is telling us that happens between, during the second trimester of pregnancy. So in utero, there's this overproduction of neurons, and there's billions of neurons. So when the connections are made in the brain of those neurons, it includes many misfires. So the misfires, that's what creates the challenges for the processing in the brain of someone on the spectrum. And there's a spectrum, because to identify those specific neurons would be very difficult. So you've probably heard the term, if you know one person with autism, you know one person with autism, because there are no two people that are alike, because those misfires that are happening from those neurological connections in the brain are all very different. So the way that Luca was challenged was he was nonverbal, so he had lost all of his communication. He could not look us in the eye. It was painful for him to do that. He had some sensory issues that were going on, and it was all materializing out of those misfires that were happening and him not knowing how to manage that or to get what he needed. So it was a bit of a mystery. That period of time was a mystery to us, because we were learning what his challenges were first and foremost, and then how it, for him as a unique little human being, how is it that we give him the tools? So we're putting tools in his toolbox to manage through those, or to learn his way through those. And then at the same time, I'm doing research on the back end, trying to determine what are the common denominators for, you know, other people who have gone through this. How is it that I collect information so that I can help my baby through this based on what other people have discovered? And again, you know, every child on the spectrum is very different. But I did find that there were some common denominators with a gluten-free, casein-free diet. And so we immediately changed his diet. We got him into these learning play therapies. And that's basically what our life was for that period of time, was we did nothing else other than, you know, take him from therapy to therapy to therapy. Now, fortunately for us, I owned my own business, so I could have my staff take care of my business, and I, you know, and my support team could take him to all of these therapies and spend, you know, 2, sometimes 3 or 4 hours a day in ABA therapy, you know, another hour or two in speech, another hour in OT, and that really was his life. He was, that little guy was busier, you know, through from 22 months to 36 months than most adults, and it was all therapy. So what happened after that was when he turned 3, then his services changed, because now he, where Regional Center was controlling some of the processes of therapy and our insurance, we're controlling this. And now he's at this different level. Everything changed about him. He went to the next level therapy. He went to the school district for services. He started a preschool program at that time. And so we just were managing our way through, first and foremost, getting him through those initial really big challenges where he struggled just with getting through the day without meltdowns and getting through the day with being able to, you know, manage through the therapies and so forth, to now we're changing it up again. Now he's going to school for part of that day, and then he's in therapies. And so you're seeing this is a big job to get through all of this. And so fast forward then a couple of years, and our second son, Micah, who was at that time 8.
Who's older than Luca, right?
Who's 16 months older than Luca, was then diagnosed opposite end of the spectrum, presenting with very different challenges. So we started that process of therapy all over again, but in a different way, because again, he's opposite end, so he has different needs. So he was brilliant, meaning that academically and his comprehension level, his vocabulary was off the charts. You know, in the third grade at a 10th or 11th grade level, but his social emotional communication or ability to have conversations or connect with his peers or understand why everyone wasn't thinking, you know, to the level that he was thinking. And so we started this process all over again once he got that diagnosis. Now, in the meantime, as we are going through Luca's therapies after diagnosis, and then came Micah, I got deeply involved in the community because I felt this pull to first and foremost give back, because I felt very grateful for having the resources available to me to do something for my child. And I saw his significant progress happening in his growth. And it was, you know, it became very apparent to me that I was blessed with the ability to get him what he needed when he needed it. And so I wanted to give back to the community. So I got involved with not only the Autism Center of Excellence and their research projects and things like that, but I also got involved with another nonprofit organization here in California and San Diego, excuse me. And I was invited to join their board. And from there, I decided to start a mom support group, because I felt like I'm not the only one going through this. I know that there are so many other that are struggling to get to where I have, you know, have had the ability to go. And how is it that we start creating, you know, building bridges for them too? And so I started this group in 2012 and was on the board and actually, you know, monthly meetings with this group. And I kept hearing different variations of the same story. And it was obvious to me that the challenges were, everything was, you know, spread out as far as services go. I have to go one place for ABA therapy, or ABA therapy comes into my home, and then I have to take my child to speech, and then there's a social group, and then there's OT, and then there's all of these, you know, very needed resources that were so scattered that parents were having a hard time with that. And then I was hearing things like, I've tried everything, but everything was ABA therapy or speech therapy or not, all of those things, because everything felt so big at the time. And when you're going through this process, just the day-to-day is a challenge. And then when you add on top of that, you know, the needs of the child outside of the home too, it just becomes this huge undertaking. And so when, you know, when I would hear, I've tried everything, I understood how big that felt. Everything was really, you know, one or two things that felt really, really big. So in the midst of hearing all of these stories and wanting so badly to start bridging gaps and asking a lot of questions for what would make it easier for people, I got a cancer diagnosis. And so during that time, I stepped down from my board position from the nonprofit, and I had to step away from my mom's support group to heal. And as I was going through that process with the Cancer Treatment Centers of America, the light bulb came on in reference to autism, because I was feeling like there has to be a better way. There has to be an easier way for parents to get what they need. How do we create a seamless process with this? Because if you draw a parent a simplistic roadmap, but that entails so many details that they can't fit it into a day with having other children or with having a job or with having a marriage and with having other responsibilities, how is it that that feels simple to them if in fact it's still a huge undertaking and not enough hours in the day to make it happen? So when that light bulb came on for what's working with cancer treatment centers, it occurred to me that it was a collaborative care platform. They have everything under one roof. That's why their success rate is so high. That's why people are surviving cancer more there than elsewhere. That's why this is working. And so then that, you know, I sat with that for a while and kept thinking, this is such a huge undertaking. I don't know. I know this has to happen for autism. That's what's going to make this work. But how do I make that happen with autism? Or how can that happen with autism? What is my role in all of that? So a couple of years into just really, you know, thinking that through, on my business side, I was making some changes in my agency. I was an insurance agent for 23 years, and so I owned agencies. And as I made some changes and met with a business coach regarding my agency, he asked me the question that no one had ever asked me before, and that was, if money wasn't a factor, if you did not have to make a living for your family, if you were you won the lottery, or you didn't even have to think about how you were going to pay the bills, what would you do? And the words fell out of my mouth. I would open an autism resource and treatment center. And at the time, I felt like, oh my gosh, those weren't my words. I wanted to stuff them back in, because I felt like that was just such a huge thing to say out loud. And he said to me, you should do that. And I think I was speechless for a couple of moments, and then I said, you don't understand. This is like a huge undertaking. I don't even know where I would begin to do this. And he shook his head and said, huh? And what ended up happening from there was just pure magic, because though I was afraid of the reality of that statement, my heart knew that was the thing. And so he asked me to make a commitment to him that I would come back with a plan for the Autism Resource and Treatment Center, just the very first step, breaking it down to how is it that you would make that happen. And so a couple of weeks later, I met with him again, and he said, okay, I'm waiting for the very first step. And the very first step was just to making a commitment to make it happen. And so I got the tattoo, and I made the commitment that in 3 years, I would open an autism resource and treatment center. And at that time, I did not even know what that meant. But this is what I did know. I knew that the answer to so many parents' prayers would be some relief, first and foremost, meaning a break from this, what felt like a speeding train, to everything under one roof, meaning that I only have to go one place and I can get everything my family needs. And so that's where this all began. It was the model. I built this model based on bringing everything that I could. And there are going to be things that aren't provided here, that's for sure. But the goal was the basics. At least we have autism therapy, which is ABA, and speech and occupational. And then we helped you know, from there, teens and adults get jobs and develop living skills and get what they need, you know, nutrition, good health, happy, healthy. How can we provide what is needed to create happy, healthy families, which in turn create happy, healthy individuals? How do we do that? And so when I created the center, it was based around that. My vision was that we would have different, you know, different parts of the center that would cater to early intervention and elementary, and then we would have teens and adults, and I knew that the needs were different through those age groups. So how is it that we, when families walk through the door, we wrap our arms around them, we lift them up, we take care of parents and let them know, A, they're not alone. We provide some respite for them, meaning that there's a place where they can go to decompress, and then we take their kiddos or their teens or adults, and we, you know, we give them what they need too. How do we do that? And how do we see siblings who have become invisible because there's a special needs kiddo in the family and all of the attention is going there? How do we see human beings again? And that's where this all began. So the model is as much as we can under one roof for autism, and it, our focus is families. We're taking care of families. So from the time I made that commitment, I developed a nonprofit corporation. I then submitted to the IRS for my 501c3 designation or approval. And from there, I just took baby steps to put all of the pieces together. And so now, 2019, 3 years later, we have, you know, 7,600 feet in Rancho Bernardo. October 1st, we opened the doors to ABA therapy. We're graduating our additional therapy availability throughout the end of the year. And by January 1st, 2020, we anticipate that we're going to have all of our services here, that we can fit in this one space, 18 offices, you know, and common areas here in this location. And, you know, we'll continue to fine tune this process. But the business model was built to be replicable and self-sustaining, so that we are a nonprofit. It is a business model that can sustain itself. And once we get this location in San Diego fine-tuned, then we can open these things anywhere. And that's really the goal. The goal is to, A, make it easier for families to get what they need, B, to know that they're not alone, C, to create an environment where this is a family culture, and you know when you walk in the door, if we don't have it here, we're going to get it here for you, and it makes this process easier. So for me, as a parent with children on the spectrum, I know that they need tools for their toolbox to be successful in life, and that's the goal when you walk through our doors, is it starts with taking care of you first and foremost, or your family, and then putting tools in those toolbox to help you be successful.
I think this is so interesting on so many levels. One, you had a thriving business for, you know, 23 years that you had built up that you were probably pretty excited about, that you decided to essentially just walk away from, right, to go pursue something else, which seems like a daunting task in itself, let alone to have, you know, 7,600 square feet of space for I guess we call it a business that doesn't have any other roadmap, right? There's not another center like this. Yeah. So maybe can you talk about the business model a little bit more, as far as you guys provide all of these resources, but the center itself isn't providing the resources, right? Individual.
True. Right. So yes, I did have a thriving insurance business, and I could have stayed and grown and, you know, continued doing what I was doing. But for me, I found purpose in autism, and I knew that I was given autism in stereo for a reason, right? I don't think that it's happenstance that I was gifted these amazing children to learn from who could teach me how to make a difference. And that's really the way that I see it. My kiddos, their diagnosis to me is not a negative thing. Has it been hard? Yes, I don't deny that. However, I have learned so much from the process that it is now allowing me to do so much for the community as a whole. So I could have stayed and, you know, continued doing business in insurance, but that is not what was filling me up on a day-to-day basis. When I walked into my agency and I interacted with my clients, yes, I loved each and every one of them. And I was very well aware that they, that I was there because of them, that, you know, that they were who allowed me to be successful in that arena. I was very much connected to that. But I was very connected to the human side of that. It wasn't just a business for me. My business was relationships. And it's so bizarre. Well, it's not even bizarre. It's so crazy to think that coming from that arena, I can bring the business acumen, the need and desire to have that human connection, and those desires were convertible to something so much bigger that has so much purpose. So I understand now that I was looking with that, you know, with that journey through coaching and the discovery and all of those things. I initially thought I was going into that process to build my business, but I was really going into that process to find myself. And what I found through that is that, you know, the purpose pulls you in a direction if you pay attention. And it was pulling me away from insurance. And so I came to an understanding that I had done all I could do in insurance. And I could help people rebuild their homes after a wildfire, or I could help them after an accident, or I could help them take care of their families with life insurance. I could do all of those things. But for me, the majority of that was about things and it wasn't about people. So when I shifted my focus to the people, there was so much fulfillment that I got from that on a day-to-day basis that I was being pulled to RC away from the business. Now, as a nonprofit, we still are a business. So that, I think, is a common misconception that a nonprofit organization means no profit. Well, a nonprofit organization means for public benefit. It means that no one person is making a profit off of an endeavor that is for the good of the public. So it's just, you know, to me, that the business acumen portion, the nonprofit portion of that was really just about identifying the public benefit as opposed to the me benefit through business. And so I think all of those things that I brought with me from insurance was imperative to the success of Artsy and the way that I built this business model. So to address your second question is this, and going backwards, the business portion, by the way, I needed that to support my family through the creation of Artsy. So I was still, you know, up until last year, I was still working in my agency and then creating Artsy in my spare time, right? So last year when it came time to really either make the jump or continue doing this in really baby steps, I decided to make the jump because A, I felt like it was time. And I also know that there are so many people who can benefit from this journey that I felt like I felt a sense of urgency to make it happen. In addition to the fact that I did, you know, I created a timeline for myself. And so I knew that by 2019, I had to have the center open because that was my commitment to me to make that happen. So I just sold the agency last year. I had been doing both for quite some time. So when I made the decision to jump, it was the business acumen that actually made this all come together. It was what I had already learned. It was what I knew from my journey with my businesses. It was what I knew, from my journey with my kids. So I had those two elements that were imperative to making this business model come together. So Artsy is the nonprofit. Artsy is not the service provider. The way that I built this business is that I bring independent service providers into my center. I provide them with a business package that includes their private office or offices, access to the entire center, all the common areas and so forth, and marketing. So I have a marketing team that does all of the marketing that brings people into the center. And so they benefit from that. So what that allows them to do is to pay Artsy on a monthly basis for that business package. But what they get to do is walk through the doors and do what they do best, as opposed to all of the business stuff that they shouldn't have to or now don't need to worry about. They can just come in and provide the service and give their...
So the goal is to build out this center, have, yes, you said, mentioned 18 offices, right? So right. Build out essentially 18 service providers to help all the way from childhood through adult and independence, right?
Right.
And then eventually to have this be replicable, mm-hmm, in other communities across the United States. How long, in a perfect world, how long would that process take until you open the next center?
So Our center here, 7600 feet, has, yes, 18 offices. One of them is mine. One of them is an ArtC autism store where we'll provide, you know, those hard-to-find specialty items, sensory items, products that are made by those on the autism spectrum that we want to showcase. We have sensory zones as well in one of those offices. And so, you know, we also have a lot of other great parts of what we're doing here. We have a parent lounge where parents can go to decompress, which is a kid-free zone, autism-free zone. We have massage chairs in there. We have sofas, a TV. We have a library. And that truly is just a place that they can go and be outside of what they're dealing with. And we have a play therapy area where, you know, not only therapies will happen in there, but we are bringing the community in to, you know, to do yoga and paint classes and those sort of things. And then we have a cafe where parents can, you know, meet to talk to other parents about what they're going through, have a cup of coffee while their kiddo's in therapy. And we have a conference area as well, where we are inviting community members in to, you know, to have meetings, to show them what they're doing and allow them to become part of our inclusionary process here. So there's a lot that's going on here. And once we fine tune all of the elements, because frankly, I'm learning as I go. I had this vision of what I wanted this to look like. And it was as simplistic as I want everything in one place so that someone, you know, a family who has a kiddo on the spectrum or an adult on the spectrum could literally walk through the doors and feel like they were home. They're somewhere, this is somewhere where they belong, everyone understands them, and, you know, as a bonus, they only have to come one place to get everything they need, or most of what they need. At least there are resources if it's not here, right? So that was the goal, but it has changed so much from my initial vision to now what I see falling into place. So right now we're in this place of allowing it to happen. We are building based on what we know. So yes, we do have the basic services that we know that kiddos do need, which are ABA speech and OT, PT. But we're also finding that, wow, there's an opportunity for chiropractic. Let's add that. So we've done that. And supported living services, there's an opportunity there. Let's do that. And so there's, you know, advocates and special needs attorneys and all of those things. So we're feeling like, oh my gosh, we have opportunity here to build bridges that we didn't know existed before. So that's the period that we're going through right now. And I believe that it's going to take us about 6 months to really just see what the final vision is going to look like. And I think it's going to change through time too. As we get better at this, we're going to make it better as we go. And we're also developing, you know, collaborations with community, because I don't believe that there's any competition in this space at all. I believe that there are not enough resources. There are too many wait lists, and there is not enough education where autism is concerned. So we're looking at ways to touch all of those things. And so we are developing collaborations where if we don't have it here, or if someone else is doing it better, or if someone else can teach us how, that's what we're looking for too. So we really have started with the trunk of the tree, if you will, and we're looking for all of those branches and watching them grow. Once this is fine-tuned here, we can open them anywhere. It's probably going to take us a year or two for our next location. But we want to get it right. Yeah. We want to get it right, and I believe we're doing that here.
Yeah, that seems a year or two still seems like a short amount of time to you know, bring this impact to another community.
Right. What's super cool about it is this, is that what I found is we have one provider, which is a clinic that provides ABA services, that now is expanding to multidisciplinary to meet the needs here. So is moving into speech and OT and PT as well, meaning expanding their clinic. So they get to come here and grow. And they now want to become our anchor tenant in whatever location, because they too want to grow throughout the U.S. And then I have a chiropractor who wants to do the very same thing. And then I have others who want to eat. So it's all just coming to fruition where I'm, you know, I'm understanding that they're, you know, the business people providing the services want to do the very same thing that we are doing, and that is grow. And how do we do that best? I believe we do that better together. So for me, it feels like the perfect marriage of those things. We, as a nonprofit, can come into a community, bring that community together, develop those collaborations, create the marketing, do it all at once for all of the service providers through our, you know, multi-channels. And so we, you know, for the public benefit as a nonprofit organization, we get the best of both worlds because we get that part that brings the community together. And then we also are, you know, bringing more therapists into the field to treat, and we're providing a better situation for them to do so. So we're making it easier for them while we're making it easier for families to get what they need too.
Yeah, that's so great. So I have two kind of last questions here. One, knowing what you know now and kind of going through two kids being diagnosed on different ends of the spectrum, what would be some recommendations you would make to parents who have had a child recently diagnosed, or maybe they think they should have their kid tested? What would you have done differently, and what would be some recommendations you would make, if anything, differently,
right,
to those parents as far as resources that are available and maybe things that you would recommend they go and do?
So what I learned from my mom's group is that it's really hard to admit something is not right with your child. It really is. And I dealt with that myself. I explained away what I was seeing because I didn't want to deal with the reality that there was perhaps something that needed to be addressed. And for selfish reasons, I don't, perhaps, but we all want to believe that our kiddos are perfectly created. I believe that the earlier that we get them treatment, the better it is for them. So I think that we have to let go of that stigma of a diagnosis, and we perhaps with support need to just be present in that moment and be willing and able to at least take the next step to find out. So there are, that is a multifaceted question that you asked me, because there's a lot in the community as a whole that really, I think, hinders our ability to do that. First and foremost is education. I had 4 children and did not know the signs and symptoms of autism. Now, that was back in 2011. Obviously, we've gotten better at communicating those things now, so I think that's not as huge of a challenge today as it was back then, but I still believe that there's not enough education out there. So I think that we have to educate people on what the signs and symptoms are, and that's one of our goals as well. And then I think you have to be willing to admit it and start looking for resources. And even if it's just the one phone call that you make that leads you somewhere else, I think that has to be addressed. And, you know, I've learned through my process that the earlier the diagnosis happens, the better overall I believe that, you know, that the kiddos do over time. And when I say that, there are different schools of thought on this, but here's,
because you have one diagnosed very early and one still diagnosed early, right? But
right,
he was already in elementary school by
exactly
the time he was, yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, because they're on opposite ends of the spectrum, their symptoms were very different, or their challenges were very, very different. And so I learned my way through that process. I think we have to start asking more questions. I think that we have to start talking about this more. If we can let go of a little bit of that stigma of the word that is so scary, and, you know, autism became the title to our fear story in the very beginning. And the reason for that is that we just didn't know what we didn't know. Now I can talk about it all day, every day. It does not faze me because I know what to do. But there are so many people who just don't. And so there's, I think, fear that keeps people from taking that next step. I think there's stigma. There's still some cultural issues with that, meaning that, you know, there are cultures that if, in fact, those words are spoken now, there are consequences that come along with that. It could be that you get disowned by your family. It could be that a child is shamed. There are so many things out there. And I think that, you know, just like cancer is now something that's talked about a lot, the difference is that autism doesn't have to be a life sentence. It doesn't. It is a different way of life, but autism is a different way of thinking, a different way of being. And I think that when we really just can be okay with saying those words and knowing that it's not a dirty word, it's literally just the difference of, you know, my child is processing You know, the way that a PC would process information is different than the way a Mac is processing information. I'm the Mac, he's the PC. It's just a different language. How do we come together in the middle? Because there are common denominators with that too. And it is really just devising a way by which we are understanding one another. We're communicating, you know, on the same field. We are understanding and empathetic and compassionate for the differences, as opposed to critical and fearful and, you know, critical and fearful. We don't have to be that way. There's a better way. We just need to talk about it. We need to understand it. We need to do something. One thing, just take one baby step. That's my best bit of advice that I think I've ever given any mother, is just start with the first step. And if that means to them getting a diagnosis, then, and if you have to take someone to hold you up while you hear those words, because here's the thing that I know for sure too, is that I have been through a lot in my life, but hearing those words and not knowing what they meant, that was one of the hardest things that I have dealt with. And it was just because it was my baby and I didn't know. Cancer was hard to hear, but I knew that I could control that to a degree because I was going to do what I needed for me. But we as parents being responsible for tiny human beings and hearing words that we don't know what the future holds because of those words, that is terrifying. It is terrifying. So how do we as a community hold space for that and help parents to understand that this doesn't have to be a life sentence? It may be hard. It's going to be hard at times, but doesn't have to be that hard.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's great. And then I think another piece of the story that's very interesting that I'm sure other people are thinking as well is you clearly had a pull away from something that was very comfortable and stable in your old business. So what would be some words of advice or wisdom to anyone that might be doing something now that either they're not super passionate about or they have a desire to do something different? What might be some words of wisdom or you know, something you wish you had known in the beginning of starting this process that you'd share to them?
You know, what's funny is I was asked that recently, what would you have done differently? And even now, having the last 3 years of this journey under my belt, I would tell you that I wouldn't change anything because I didn't know what I didn't know. And so this all starts with baby steps. It's taking the first step and just having faith that you'll see the next step to take and know that if it's right or wrong, it's okay, because it's just the forks in the road that we come to, right? And we have to make decisions. And through this, you know, through the last 3 years, I've made decisions that were not the right ones too. And I had to really reevaluate and say, okay, well, maybe that's not where I'm supposed to be going with this. Maybe this is the answer, and trying something different. I had to stay very fluid with this process and making the transition from my business to this venture has been all about faith and baby steps. Faith and baby steps. Because what's the worst that could happen? I fail.
Yeah. You go back to insurance.
Exactly. I have backup plans. Yeah. I don't ever want to have to use them, but I have them. And so my best advice is to stay present in the knowing. And I think that we all know what our path is. I think that many of us are just too afraid to take the steps to get there. And I get that. It's hard. It's hard. But when I look at my little boys and they walk through those doors and know that Artsy is all about them, and they revel in the beauty of that, it makes all of this worth it. And there have been some challenges, some really dark moments through this process, but every one of those moments take us to a better place. And so I am excited about what comes next, and I have to work really, really hard to keep myself in a place of not becoming fearful, but staying faithful.
Yeah, that's awesome. Any closing thoughts or anything else you want to share about the center? I also think I want to ask too, we had talked over coffee that you had met Clay Marzo's mother. Is that through the mom support group, or what other connections have come from the support groups and building this center that might be interesting or that you'd want to share?
Sure. So I go to as many events, autism events, as I can. And, you know, the networking for bringing this together has been absolutely imperative because, you know, obviously I can't do this alone. So who is it that wants to join me in this venture? Or along the way, who can I help? Or what resources am I bringing to the center? So I did meet Clay Marzo's mom and Clay. Actually, we had a great conversation. I met them actually at a conference where she was presenting. And she had, she was telling a story about Clay and his process through autism and his world championship with surfing and so forth. And I've actually stayed in touch with her. She and I have become good friends. And there are many stories like that. And, you know, I think what people don't realize is that there's only a portion of what you see with that journey through the movie that was made or through, you know, Clay surfing or YouTube videos or whatever. There's an entirely other story. And, you know, a very different view of what happens behind the scenes from that. And it's not often that we, because this isn't talked about a lot, because the connections are only in autism-specific communities, there isn't a lot of conversation around that, or there isn't a lot of discovery that happens with that, because you have to be in a place where you feel safe to have that conversation. So Jill just happened to be in a safe place to have that conversation with me when I was sitting next to her, and she said to me, "This has been a really hard journey." And I said, "I know, I'm there too. It has been really hard, but, you know, we talked about all of those things." And, you know, in the end, she was grateful for the opportunity just to be able to have that conversation with someone who understood. And I think each of these things that, you know, that we endure, there are so many others who are going through the very same things. And we have the ability not only to connect with those people, but to be helpful and to also gain knowledge. I mean, this is, it's hard to put yourself in a position to talk about what scares you most and what is most difficult in your life, right? There's a vulnerability about that that is terrifying too. And I think when we feel safe to do that, then that's the kind of discovery that comes from this. So I could give you a half a dozen different connections that you would be wowed by. But to me, it isn't about the celebrity or about the, you know, accolade. It's all about the real stuff that happens with diagnosis and with this journey and with understanding that this is a community of people who are not talking enough about this. This is a community of people who aren't getting what they need. This is a community of people that is growing every single day. So I can tell you, when Luca was diagnosed, it was 1 in 88. 1 in 88 children were being diagnosed on the spectrum then. Now, 8.5 years later, it is 1 in 59.
Wow.
So,
is that solely because it's being talked about more and understood more that or is it more kids or the higher percentage of children have autism now?
Well, there are different schools of thought with different professionals. And I will tell you that I'll just give you my assumption.
Yeah.
Based on what I know, autism is it's an environmental expression of a gene that already exists. So if you think it's genes and it's environment, well, the more we procreate, the more we are duplicating those genes, right? And so the more we are exposed to in our environment, that becomes bigger too. So I don't know what that means in the future, but I know that just through my journey alone, I have seen that more and more. I think that a big portion of that is we're better at diagnosing, that's for sure. But I do believe that there are more people being diagnosed as well. Mm-hmm. And if you think about it over time, we have an entire generation of people who were either undiagnosed or diagnosed with no services or not enough services.
Yeah, definitely.
So I think looking back, we have to, you know, I think we have to realize that there are those who have the same challenges that now we're identifying and now we're providing those services for that didn't get what they needed back then, and it's only getting bigger. So if you take that, I call the What Now Society. The What Now Society are those people who, again, are not diagnosed or don't have haven't gotten the services that they need or enough services, that now are at a point in their life where, you know, they don't have the job skills or the life skills to be successful or independent in life. And then we have this entire new society of now we're struggling for services to get kiddos what they need. So what do we have to look forward to? How are we going to slow this trajectory? I don't see that happening anytime soon. And there's a lot of research that's being done, which is great. but that's great for future generations. That doesn't help us today.
Yeah.
So I think that this is just getting bigger and bigger. And so I feel like the pull to create more solutions that make it easier for people to get what they need or make it possible. Because there are those who don't have options. They either don't have the insurance, or they don't have the car, or they just don't have something that's keeping them from getting what they need. And so I think that there has to be answers for that too.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll end on this. What are some ways that for parents or children or families that aren't on the spectrum and dealing with this, that can be, because you had mentioned a lot about being supportive and creating a good space to have these conversations. What are some ways that they can be supportive and help be a part of the solution in this?
You know, what's funny is when I make presentations, the first question that I normally ask is, who in this room knows someone or loves someone or knows someone who loves someone on the autism spectrum? And so far, it is 100% of the people in the room. So we all are exposed, right? What Now Society and 1 in 59, okay? If you put all that together, that's a good number of population. I think that we have to understand that autism is a different way of thinking. And I think that we have to honor and respect that. And I think we have to get from a place of judgment and fear to empathy and compassion. So to answer your question directly, I feel like we have to be more unconditional in our support. Everybody's dealing with something, and it has a different name. Autism is just one of those things. If I put mental health challenges together, and depression and anxiety and ADHD and, you know, all of the things that could be a struggle, that's just part of life for human beings. The same thing is true with autism. This is just a part of life for human beings. We have an opportunity to help it, to make it better. We have an opportunity to be present and to be helpful, as opposed to staying in a place of fear and because we don't know what we're dealing with, be critical or judgmental about it. I just don't think that there's any space at all. There certainly is no space for that here.
Yeah. Yeah. Where are some places, if people want to check out the website, learn more about the center, support the center, where can they find you and learn more about this?
Our website is www.artcsandiego.org. And we are on Google. We are on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Pinterest. We're everywhere. And, you know, we're being somewhat methodical about our exposure at this point because we are building the center. But by January, we'll be everywhere.
Yeah. Awesome. Do you guys have any upcoming events or any other places that the community can come out and support?
We do have a grand opening coming up, and that is being planned right now. We also have our second Artsy auction for autism that will happen at Bernardo Winery, and that happens June 13th of 2020.
Great.
So that'll be out on the site as well.
And that concludes our episode with ARTC and Tracy. If you want to learn more about the center, the best way is to go onto their website, artcsandiego.org. They have a couple of events coming up. One, they had mentioned their launch coming at the end of the year. They also have a fundraiser next year that'll be closer towards the summertime that will be at a winery and a bunch of great stuff going on. So keep an eye out for some of those things coming from them. And if you want to reach out to Tracy directly, all of her contact information is on the website if you want to get involved. We'd also love if you enjoyed this episode for you to share it with friends, family members, coworkers, anyone you know that likes podcasts. And we'd also love input from you on businesses, nonprofits, or individuals that you'd like to hear on the podcast. Best way to reach out is through email. The email address is info@howitsbuilt.com.